The Guardian.
Hello, this is Politics Weekly. I'm Matt Wells. This week, a Lib Dem backlash against the government. Lord Oakeshott resigns as a Treasury spokesman after bank bosses are allowed their bumper bonuses. And councillors across the country are in open revolt over cuts. Plus,
frankly, we need a lot less of the passive tolerance of recent years and a much more active, muscular liberalism.
As David Cameron flexes his liberal muscle, did he go too far in linking multiculturalism with a battle to prevent terrorism? And also this week, twin set and pearls at the ready.
You turn if you want to. The ladies not for turning.
Can Meryl Streep capture the real Maggie Thatcher in a movie released later this year? And why does the Iron Lady still have such an emotional pull? Joining me for some liberal muscle turning are The Guardian's diarist Hugh Muir, New Statesman columnist, former director of communications for the Lib Dems, Ollie Grender, and Guardian columnist Jackie Ashley. Welcome to you all. How are we? We're ready to tone up.
We are. We're muscular and ready to go.
Good, excellent. Now, it was billed as the moment the government got tough with the banks. Project Merlin would curb the excessive bonuses and get banks lending again. But with the heads of state-owned Lloyds and RBS both trousering significant bonuses and no absolute commitment to lend to businesses, it was all too much for the Lib Dem peer, Lord Oakeshott, who's resigned his position as Treasury spokesman.
I think that the Treasury's negotiating tactics have not been very good. They've got an awful combination of arrogance and incompetence. Most of them couldn't negotiate their way out of a paper bag, and this has not been as tough a deal as it should have been. But we have made some progress, and we now move on to Vickers and stopping the banks ever ruining the country again.
Oh dear. Warming to his theme later, he said, if this is robust action on bank bonuses, my name's Bob Diamond. Ollie Grender, I thought I'd just start with you, just in passing.
I can't think why you're starting with me.
Except
for my, kind of liberal muscles. Yes, Matthew Oakeshott, what can I say? I just think that what was an extraordinary moment was a month ago when he was on Newsnight expressing utter fury. And I tend to think that if somebody is expressing utter fury on Newsnight, as opposed to behind the scenes in Whitehall and in the Treasury, that the battle has possibly been lost. And I must confess that at that moment, I thought, this is a signal that the battle has been lost.
So not a good move to come out all guns blazing on Newsnight?
Well, I just think that, for the Lib Dems, this is a very strange transition. I was reading Blair's memoirs last night, and he talks about the Liberal Democrats being unprepared and unable to govern because when it comes to it, they prefer to cart from the sidelines rather than get into the nitty-gritty and take responsibility for decisions. And I think there's something in that. Not that I'm saying necessarily that the decision was right, not that I'm saying necessarily that if I was in any way involved, I wouldn't be fighting some of those battles to try and improve the deal with the banks. But I think that you use the media in a different way when you are in government.
You mentioned sniping from the sidelines. We've got this letter in the Times today, more sniping from over 70 Lib Dem councillors berating the government over cuts. I mean, this is all a bit of a headache for old Nick Clegg. He's going to have to work a bit longer than 3 o'clock, isn't he, to sort all this out.
Well, I think it's more than a headache. And I think I would say to Ollie that it wasn't just, he was being silly with megaphone diplomacy. I think he really is in the state that quite a lot of his and her colleagues are saying we've had enough of being the patsy for this government.
Which is actually what the councillors are saying
to you. How far are you going to push us? How far are you going to make us take the rap for cuts that we don't necessarily agree with in the first place? At the moment, Lib Dem ministers are going out there. They're the ones getting all the ordure, aren't they? Far more actually than George Osborne, which is extraordinary. And I think finally they're beginning to say enough is enough.
You could argue, though, Hugh, that Lord, I said he was a Treasury spokesman. He was not a member of the government, was he?
So he wasn't important in that sense.
And lots of people are going to say who he anyway.
Well, they might do, but I think there is a kind of lightning rod danger here. In that, there, as Jackie was saying, there's a lot of disgruntlement. The timing could be very important in this. It could be that he was being quite so outspoken on Newsnight because he had decided even then that the battle was lost and that at some point soon he was going to have to break ranks. And there are a lot of people who feel that way, I think, within the Liberal ranks. And now, in a way, they have a champion. He's very articulate. He loves the media. other media loves him.
And how?
Because he gives these great quotes, you know, awful combination of arrogance and competence.
Well, absolutely.
As we just heard.
I think
Treasury officials.
One of the things that you notice about this is it's not just a kind of resignation by inflection, which, you know, it's not generally how, you know, I feel as if I've gone out to bat with one hand tied behind my back. You know, he's saying these people couldn't negotiate their way out of a paper bag. Yeah. You know, it's all very bare knuckle stuff.
And, Ollie, I mean, you better fill us in for the uninitiated about who Matthew Oakeshott is and why he is sort of a bit more significant than just on paper it would seem. He's a big mate of Cable, isn't he?
He's a big mate of Cable. He was very involved in Chris Hume's leadership campaign.
And will be in any future one.
I don't know of any future one. I mean, I just think he is absolutely loved by the media. Why is he loved by the media? Whenever you see that quote about senior parliamentarian kicking off,
all right.
Everybody knows
who it is.
Who it is.
Not saying anything more.
And so, you know, kind of, I mean, obviously, you know, he is very experienced in terms of the city and has been advising Vince Cable, although I think that actually the little group that he was on has not been advising Vince Cable for a while now.
He has been hosting Vince Cable, though, in his... I was reading Allegra Stratton's excellent profile this morning in his...
skiing, yeah.
Where was it? Courcheval. Skiing chalet in Courcheval, which is a great detail. There's also this other detail about Vince Cable dashing off red runs, which I think is a bit less convincing, I think. But there we go.
So I think it will be quite interesting because, I mean, my thought about Matthew is that Matthew all along, whether the Lib Dems have been in government or out of government, always he has expressed opinions via the media. And I just sometimes I think that's, you know, a very blunt instrument when you're lobbying for change.
But I think that's why he's quite dangerous, actually, for Nick Clegg, though, because, as you say, he does love the media. He's got very good contacts. I mean, he's very good at actually getting journalists to come and speak to him, which, frankly, most politicians are hopeless at. And I think that is a danger for Clegg.
Where are we, Hugh, then, with where the Lib Dems are generally? Are they just generally peed off and not happy? I mean, will we see more resignations, or are they determined to, you know, are they with the leader and they'll tough it out?
Well, Ollie would know better than I, but I think it's very difficult because, you know, on the one hand, things are very bumpy and, you know, they must be thinking what on earth will happen to us, you know, if we have to face the public anytime soon. On the other hand, you know, they are still in the middle of this historic, this thing they couldn't have dreamed of. A couple of years ago, they're there. They're in government. People are calling them minister. They're being nice to them, and so what do you do?
But it could all just Ollie just could all be over in a flash of the election pan, couldn't it?
It could. What I always go back to, I mean, for me, as someone who's dedicated 20 years of my life to the party, this is more than just, you know, a joke. It's more than just something to have a laugh about. It is very, very serious for me. And it is a roller coaster experience. I don't think that any Lib Dem would deny that. But what I will still always go back to, is that at the critical moment that the decision was made, it was, in my view, the right decision. Now, that doesn't mean that there isn't going
to
be...
You're talking about the decision to go into government.
Yeah, that doesn't mean that there isn't going to be immense pain, and I think it is going to get a lot worse. But what I think people fail to understand is that in local councils up and down the land, Lib Dems have experienced government and have experienced highs and lows of that moment, and that they're made of sterner stuff.
But wouldn't that imply that what's happening now is what you signed up to? Now, in terms of, say, the NHS reforms, it's not. That wasn't what you signed up to at all.
That wasn't in the agreement.
Well, I was someone who was opposed to ring-fencing the NHS in the first place because I have very personal views about the NHS, which are not as affectionate as most people who, I guess, would listen to this podcast or read The Guardian have. So, you know, I think that the NHS does need to dramatically change. I've thought that for a very long time. I thought I was a lone voice in the Lib Dems on that. But if you go back and look in the Lib Dem manifesto, which I keep doing, you will find that there were proposals to remove the strategic health authorities. There was talk. I remember writing to an independent healthcare client about the Conservatives and what their proposals were about with regard to the health service. And I said, ha, 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 they're saying that they want to dramatically transform the health service, but I kind of don't believe that they'll actually have the bottle to do that. So, you know, I actually wrote it as advice to an independent healthcare client before the election.
All right, well, we promise not to make any more cheap Lib Dem jokes.
Oh, no, cheap jokes, I do not mind. What I just wanted to stress is that, you know, it is a very serious experience for most Lib Dems. They do not underestimate the seriousness. And that came through in the party conference that we had last year, which is that, you know, the Lib Dems, yes, they are delighted finally to implement some policies. Do they understand and recognise that this is going to be the toughest ride of their lives? Yeah, you bet they do.
OK, we should mention in passing in this section about loosely connected to finance that it was the week that Ed Balls first squared up to George Osborne across the dispatch box. Let's hear a clip.
This negotiation has turned from Project Merlin into the Wizard of Oz. The curtain's been pulled back and there is nothing there. And the question, Mr Speaker, is of the leading players on the front bench, who is the one without courage? Who's the one without a brain? And who's the one without a heart?
There was one thing missing from that rant, and that was an apology. Yeah. Because he was actually the city minister. He talked about all the things, and I'm going to come on to them, that we need to do to regulate the city. He was actually the city minister. He stood at this dispatch box for 2 years as the city minister, could have done any of the things that were either in my statement or in the reply to that statement, but he didn't. And the truth is this, he is a man with a past, and we're not going to let him forget it.
Jackie Ashley, this is shaping up to be one of the hot political tickets of the week, isn't it?
Oh, it is. I mean, they're both so nasty, aren't they? They both great. Really hate each other, you know, and neither of them pulls their punches. So I think, yes, it's going to be great fun. A lot more heat than light, I think. We're going to get from these kind of things. So I think probably people will soon tire of the Punch and Judy aspect of it.
I think Osborne, well, they seem to be pretty much equal to me, but the pundits, Hugh, seem to think that Osborne got the better of Balls.
Well, he'll be a slippery opponent. The Labour setup reminds me a bit of the old Minder series, you know, where you had Terry, kind of, you had Arthur being cerebral, and then he'd have this big bloke that he'd just say, go and hit him, Terry. you know, so occasionally, once a week, Ed Miliband will say to Ed Balls, go across and hit him. and, you know, I think actually what you want from Ed Balls, you're getting. You know, you want kind of aggression and thuggery, maybe, and you get that. And how do you take on George Osborne? I mean, he is very Bond baddie, Bond villain, but do you out-smooth him? Probably not. You've probably got to rough him up a bit.
Yeah, OK. Well, we'll see how that turns out. There's more on all of this, of course, at guardian.co.uk/politics. Leave your thoughts on our blog. Last weekend, as several hundred members of the far-right group, the English Defence League, held a rally in Luton, home to a sizeable Muslim community, David Cameron was giving a speech in Munich.
Under the doctrine of state multiculturalism, we've encouraged different cultures to live separate lives, apart from each other and apart from the mainstream. We fail to provide a vision of society to which they feel they want to belong. We've even tolerated these segregated communities behaving in ways that run completely counter to our values. So when a white person holds objectionable views, racist views, for instance, we rightly condemn them. But when equally unacceptable views or practices come from someone who isn't white, we've been too cautious, frankly even fearful, to stand up to them.
Cameron urged European states to abandon passive tolerance and adopt what he called muscular liberalism instead. Isn't that just an oxymoron, though? We asked Frank Furedi, Professor of Sociology at the University of Kent.
Historically, the term muscular liberalism grew up in the Cold War period, and it was represented as an important attempt to stand up for the ideas of freedom and democracy, and not to let a more populist, totalitarian, ideologically driven movements gain influence in democratic societies. So it was a fairly defensive reaction, mainly in the 1950s. He's using toleration and tolerance in a very confused kind of sense, because what he's really doing is he's objecting to the fact that we have multiculturalism in a way that implies non-judgmentalism, because one of the big values of contemporary multiculturalism is a kind of sense of live and let live, and, you know, we respect each other's difference, we respect each other's diversity, and that's the end of discussion. And instead of fixing in on that and saying that the problem is the fact that we're not really judging one another, we're not really having a conversation, I think he mistakenly blames tolerance, whereas tolerance doesn't have any negative connotations. Tolerance, in fact, is one of the defining features of liberalism. I think what Cameron is doing is sending out a signal. What I find a bit disappointing is that there isn't a clear set of proposals that attempt to, initiate a more kind of grown-up dialogue where the issues that confront us all become subjects of debate and discussion, where we expect people to get stuck in and develop a clear point of view. I think that whatever happens in our society, these changes are generational changes. You can't simply change culture politically. It's not something that policy can fundamentally alter overnight. All that can happen is that we send out signals about what is it that we value and what is it that we don't. And I think that that's got to be part of what we do as a society, and it's got to be addressed a little bit more, in a slightly more sophisticated way if we're going to improve upon the existing situation.
Professor Frank Ferrady there. Jackie Ashley, he was talking about signals that Cameron was sending out. Some people might call them dog whistles. It does seem that he has changed his rhetoric on this from even a year or so ago.
Yes, I do think it's significant. It came at a time when he was needing to reassure his own backbenchers, who were very cross, just as the Lib Dems are pretty cross with their leaders. So it was definitely, I think, dog whistle politics. I think it was most unfortunate he made the speech on that particular day when the English Defence League were marching. I know people say, oh, well, that date had been in the diary for months, but heavens above, it's not rocket science to see that actually if you do it on that very day, it's not going to help at all. But I think Frank Ferrady is right. It was just far too simplistic. And just to declare an end to multiculturalism was a ridiculous thing to do. I mean, certainly there are issues to be discussed, not least things like faith schools and housing, which I think are a very important part of this debate. But I think he was just trying to oversimplify a subject which always, always gets very angry action on both sides.
Hugh?
I think it was a classic Cameron exercise, really. It was all tune, no words. Because, firstly, what did he mean by multiculturalism? No one ever quite defines it. There are many, many different definitions. On one level, you can object to it. On one level, you can approve of it.
Yeah, and he's not proposing to change anything, is he? He just declares it's over. But
I think he wants to change the look of tomorrow's Daily Mail, so he gave him a page lead. Where are all these non-white people who are allowed to say racist things without fear of criticism? I've not met any of them. If we all have to, under his new muscular liberalism doctrine, adhere to a particular set of values, what are those values? When were they decided? I mean, as usual, there's no detail here. Who decides whether someone's adhering to those values or not?
There is, Ollie, this proposal that he's going to cut off the Muslim Council of Britain and all these other organisations who don't sign up to his new code or new values. Do you think he's serious, or do you accept what Jackie is saying and Hugh is saying in that there's no substance behind it and this is just a signal to the Tory right?
I think he probably thinks there's quite a lot of substance to it, but I personally don't recognise the Britain that he describes as someone who's grown up most of my life in London. It's not a community I recognise. But I think his anger afterwards about the criticism of it was genuine and surprise of that, because I think he probably thought he was saying something that would be, and it was briefed around that, quite radical, and this will be remembered, in history. And I think it
in
was
Munich,
a kind of
all places. Munich speech.
I know, extraordinary. But and I think that this was a kind of a Hilton blue sky thinking kind of speech. Is my impression.
Right.
I think genuinely the motivation is to open up a debate. I think that all of you are right in terms of the substance behind it. But then, I talk to people in Whitehall who say we are desperate for this, some of these debates to happen, right, but without them becoming instantly polarised. And I think there is a place for something around this. I just don't think that speech cracked it. I think that David Cameron will believe that it was a seminal moment. And I think that others who have been looking at this issue for longer than him will say, there's no change here, and a lot of The stuff that he said is stuff that Trevor Phillips said some time ago.
Tony Blair, actually. I mean, Tony Blair made quite a similar speech many years back as well. And Labour politicians over the years have been saying this kind of thing. But it's easy to say, not so easy to do. As I say, I think a lot of it comes back to ghetto housing and things like that. And indeed, faith schools. You know, if you're going to want a less polarised Britain. And I think Ollie's right. You know, London is a brilliant melting pot. You know, very few problems. Certain cities in the north do find it much more difficult.
But still quite getting, you know, London is a ghettoised place.
Well, except that when I worked for Shelter, I went over to New Orleans before the floods and took a look at the social housing issues there. And you could literally cross over a street between the white community and the black community. And you knew exactly where those street crossings were. And in London, it is and has always been different in that respect. The mix between social housing, private housing, and the mix between different racial communities has always been, kind of much better.
Of course, there is a debate to be had, but what he did was to conflate two things. He merged a speech about community cohesion, which, you know, is a very legitimate subject, with a speech about fighting terrorism, which is, again, a very legitimate subject. But it's probably not a good idea to conflate those two things, to talk about, you know, the fact that whites can say one thing and non-whites can... another, and to do it on the same day as an EDL march in Luton.
I'll just ridiculous. Come back on the timing, if I may, which is that I always think that journalists believe that there's more to it in terms of timing. I often think there are many cock-ups in the diary. I often think that people don't spot things.
And they
like
probably
this.
Didn't realise until a few days before because, you know, why would they, maybe?
But isn't that why you have all these expensive spin doctors who are former journalists who are meant to say, hey, on Saturday there's going to be big news?
Yeah, but you know what? Journalists are like, they work to the agenda of the next couple of days, not the next few weeks.
Wouldn't you have just written a couple of paragraphs into the speech? And so you actually addressed
just
that.
Just dissociate yourself from
absolutely.
The EDL. Yeah. That's all it needed was one sentence.
Just before we move on, Jackie, I just wanted to ask about how you think that his speech sat with Sai Devasi's speech a few weeks ago. She said that Islamophobia was the acceptable racism around the dinner table in Britain, and that was a much different tone, wasn't it?
Well, it was indeed, but obviously she has a very different experience, doesn't she? I mean, I still find it rather strange that she sits so cheerfully in the Conservative Party, I have to say. But I don't think they've got really a very coherent policy generally on immigration, on community relations, and, as you said, on fighting terrorism. They're all different things. And I think they're not.
But
really
I don't think the
together.
Last government did, and that's therein lies the issue, which is to have open, honest discussions about this is sometimes very difficult because it comes very polarised very quickly.
But that's why this is about the detail, because otherwise you just get into cartoon politics. Yeah. We can all agree that Omar Bakri probably shouldn't have government funding. But the difficulty is when you're discussing, you know, the finer judgments than that. You know, is someone who is critical of the government's policy in Afghanistan then seen as being as acting against our values and therefore ruling themselves out of contention for government funding?
Thanks very much, Hugh. We'll leave that there for now. You can have an open and honest discussion about this over on Commenters Free, where there's no cartoon politics there. There are a few places north of Watford in which the name Margaret Thatcher doesn't elicit an angry response. Destroyer of industry, warmonger, milk snatcher, you hear it all. But the Iron Lady left office nearly 20 years ago. This week, though, she was back on the front pages of nearly every newspaper, or rather it was her uncanny lookalike, Meryl Streep, in a costume for a forthcoming movie of Margaret Thatcher's life. It was an extraordinary picture, Hugh, wasn't it?
It did so look like her.
I know.
I wanted to hear the voice. I mean, has she got the voice? That's going to be the thing. And Meryl Streep's very good at getting voices, but I mean, that is so distinctive a voice that if it's even slightly wrong, we're all going to get it. We're all going to criticise her for it.
Why, Jackie, why does this sort of picture just walk onto the front pages? What is it about Margaret Thatcher that, after all these years, still holds such a cachet?
I think she was the only female politician we have ever had that has actually ruled the roost, isn't she? I mean, no other female politician has ever come near. And in fact, as a prime minister, she ruled the roost far more than any either former or subsequent prime minister, even more than Blair. I mean, what she said went. It was quite extraordinary. I can remember I was a junior reporter then. She'd come into a room and people would literally sort of shrink. And she seemed to have this amazing charisma and determination that people are still sort of amazed about. How did she do it?
Polly.
And femininity as well, which is the bizarre thing, isn't it? I mean, when you see her on telly, you think she's, you know, kind of scary titan. But actually, when you see her in real life, there is an amazing, as described, of course, by the inimitable Alan Clark in his diaries, you know, there is something very feminine about her.
And apparently Meryl Streep is going to bring this out in the film, the kind of how she uses her feminine side and her sexuality to get things. It's amazing.
She does have several holes on the party, isn't it? Because, as you say, if you read Alan Clark's diary, there's almost this kind of autoerotic within the toy party.
And I bizarrely found myself, and goodness knows how, at a Carlton Club dinner that she was the guest of honour at, about 5 months before the general election, where actually I was introduced to her, and she said to me, "And when did you leave the Liberal Democrats?" And I said, I haven't left, actually, and the look of horror on her face. But what was amazing is they worship her now in the party. It's almost like, you know, kind of, goodness knows what will happen when she, you know, sadly dies. Yeah. But, you know, at the moment, they absolutely worship her. If she's anywhere near any Tories, you know, it is like a complete worship.
Well, it'll be a state event, won't it?
Isn't that what's hilarious, though, in that they worship her, they deify her still, and yet she doesn't really do them any good. This kind of constant evoking of the spirit of Thatcher doesn't do them any good.
I think she's Marmite, and you either love her or hate her. And, you know, and for those of us who grew up in, you know, kind of her world, you have a very, very clear emotional view.
But they forget where we were by the end of her time in government. I remember I was on a Central Line train and the driver said, "I'm sorry, we're going to be stuck here for a while." And there were groans. And he said, "And by the way, Margaret Thatcher just resigned." Mm. And it was a street party within our tube train.
The day everybody in the nation spoke to each other.
Absolutely. And I think they forget that when they invoke the great days of Margaret Thatcher.
This is the interesting thing. You've all got Margaret Thatcher stories. We've all got Margaret Thatcher stories, haven't we? And I can't really say we've
she
all
just
got
had such a
Gordon Brown
footprint,
stories.
Didn't she? In a way that no one else has done. Yeah. I think what will be interesting, though, I read the film is going to be saying that she had moments of doubt over things like the Falklands War. And I have to say, sort of following her as I did very closely, I slightly wonder if she'd had any doubts about anything at all.
Okay. Well, listen, we'll all be going to that film, I think. That sounds great. That's it for this week. Thank you very much to Ollie Grender. Thanks a lot for coming in. Jackie Ashley and Hugh Muir. The producer was Phil Maynard. I'm Matt Miles. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.